Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to your Dunamos Life. I'm Dr. Pauline Dillard, Executive Director and CEO of Dunamos Center Ministries in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Here at Dunamos Center Ministries, our mission is to bring praise, honor, and glory to God by building Christ-centered, heart-connected marriages, births, and families who have deeper relationship with God and each other.
Hi, this is Catherine.
Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Do you want to go ahead and give some contact info before we go into our topics?
Sure. There's lots of ways you can get a hold of us. On Facebook, search Dunamos Center Ministries. On Twitter, go to @YourDunamosLife. We would love to get a direct email from you. That address is dunamoslife@dunamoscenter.com. And as always, there's the good old phone number here in Colorado Springs at 719-231-7183. And for all of those, Dunamos is spelled D-U-N-A-M-A-S.
Yes, thank you so much. So today, Catherine, we're going to talk about ADHD, ADD, and, you know, this really fits under what we want to, you know, help build strong families and marriages and all that, because it's really an issue for a lot of families today.
Right. Would you say it's growing in number of, what would you say, diagnosed cases, reported cases?
I think that you hit it when you say more and more are being diagnosed with it. The fact of the matter is that any kid who's a little bit busy could easily be diagnosed with ADHD or
okay.
ADD.
Okay, yeah.
And so, you know, we're just, it's to me one of the diagnoses du jour.
Right. Do we have a listing of the symptoms or, you know, what qualifications they use to diagnose a child? Do you know those?
I don't know them right offhand.
The specifics, okay.
Yeah, but mainly it's kids who are fidgety, can't sit still, can't focus, their minds want. Now, the ADD part is like their minds are constantly wandering. They might sit still, but they can't seem to stay focused on anything.
Mentally
focused.
Okay.
They zone out. That could be a piece of it as well. They have trouble in school because they lose track of the class or the lessons or things like that. The H part, of course, is that hyperactivity piece where they can't sit in their chair. They're constantly bouncing up and down. They're wandering around the classroom. They're, you know, at home. They're busy all the time. They get angry easily if you try to control that
uh-huh.
sort of thing.
Running from room to room.
They
have
may
to
talk
have a different
nonstop.
Activity. Okay.
You ask them to do something, they can't stay focused on a task.
I feel like that's my children.
Yeah, exactly, children.
But,
okay. Just saying, children. We're seeing more and more of it because our culture has changed significantly, too, in the last 100 years.
In what way would you say?
50 years. Well, we were a agriculturally based country, and so these kids would have to go outside and work, and they would burn off all this energy. They would
right.
have to work on the farm. They were expected to help out around house. There wasn't this, okay, well, you know, if you're having a hard time focus, then we'll just let that go. The parents were there working with them constantly. And when they did start going to school, up until really probably the 60s and 70s, if a child couldn't sit still in the classroom, the teacher sent them outside and told them to run around the building.
Really?
Till they were tired enough to sit still. Then they would sit still and pay attention.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the line, the parents decided in the 1970s or so that that wasn't a good thing to do to their child, to let them go run around the building, that that was, like, abusive to their child.
Well, you know, and unfortunately, sometimes now there's safety issues.
Exactly.
With certain neighborhoods not being real great. You don't really want to send a child out on their own.
Right.
Who knows who else is out there.
But depending on where you live, like
right.
here where we live, we have closed gyms. We have
right.
only every school, even in an area that's a basic outside school because of weather, will have an enclosed gym. They'll have a basketball gym.
True. That's
and
true.
So why can't the child go run around inside that gym where there's usually teachers very close by?
If not a PE class going on. Yeah.
You know, and just take a note, walk in, hand it to the teacher. I need to run around the gym. Okay, great. And the PE teacher's like, go run, you know, I need this part of the gym, but go run sprints, you know, back and forth across there. And then we somehow along the way, the pharmaceutical companies got in on this. Hey, if we can get a diagnosable problem, we can sell drugs for it. And that's always been the foundation of a lot of these medical diagnoses, is the pharmaceutical companies want to sell a drug.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So they came up with Ritalin.
Yeah.
In the 60s, 70s.
Really? It's been, I didn't know it's been around that long.
Oh, yeah. I knew kids in the 1970s on Ritalin.
Oh.
Yeah. And so that started back in the 1960s. And they would somehow, we've gotten this cultural mindset that it's kinder and gentler to drug our children than to have them go run around the gym.
Yeah, but now those kids on drugs are doing what? I mean, they get you, I don't know, I look at children that have been on, even some, you know, been on drugs, even if it's doctor prescribed, and then they have this mindset that they're supposed to be on drugs the whole time, their
yes,
whole life.
That there's something wrong with them and they're broken.
Yeah, and so now Ritalin may not be enough as they get older, so now I got to find another drug to be on.
It has to be stronger and this sort of thing.
And then another, and then another, and then I can't handle my brain, and so I'm going to go shoot up something.
Right, because I have to get further and further into it.
Yeah.
So one of the things that has been going around probably on social media lately is this article about how the quote-unquote inventor, quote-unquote father of ADD, ADHD, has recanted and said that it's not a real disease right before he died, which he died in 2009.
Okay.
So the reason I bring that up is because I do want to talk about what really happened, what's really happening there. Do you think that if he actually said that in 2009, it wouldn't have immediately hit all media circuits in 2009?
And now it's
2015.
Later.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden we're all seeing it? So what really happened there?
Yeah.
Do you have? I do. I looked into it, and I thought, let's look at it because I think it's key to what we're talking about here as parents and you know, working with our kids and things like that. Really, what he talked about was that it wasn't so much that it was a quote unquote fictitious disease, but that the assertion that ADHD is influenced by genetic predisposition, he basically said that is overstated. You know, that everybody wants to, that's what you were just saying. My brain, I was born with a broken brain,
mm-hmm.
so I have to have a drug to fix the broken brain
mm-hmm.
because I was born with it.
Okay.
So he's saying that position was way overstated, and that rather the social environment was a greater risk factor.
So if I'm understanding, you're saying that there's possibly a slight or maybe somewhat genetic propensity for these types of behaviors.
Yes.
But that it's really the surroundings of the child, the parent, the school, the food, the TV, whatever.
Right.
Is a bigger factor than
right.
whatever genetic trait there might be.
Yes. And, you know, I had a child that was over the top. Okay, so, you know, I can sit here and nobody can look at me and nobody, and this will really get me, if anybody tries to tell me, you just don't know what it's like. Oh, honey, yes, I do. And I know what it's like in a really big way.
Yes.
Because not only did I have a child whose behavior was out of control,
mm-hmm.
but he was physically larger than every other child in his class.
Right.
So he would consume the air of a classroom, if that makes sense, okay? And it would become dangerous in their eyes.
Yeah. Not only was he emotionally
mm-hmm.
everywhere, all over the place,
right.
running around, and maybe physically running around, but also physically big.
Right. So if he did something out of that anger, he could actually hurt people. Whereas
yeah.
somebody who was smaller or normal size, they might do the exact same behavior, and they're not going to break anything, including another kid's nose or something.
Oh, no.
No. Okay. So the reason I say that is because I want anybody who's listening to me say your kid does not need drugs to realize I know what it's like to try as a parent to figure out what is the problem that's going to help him
yeah.
without just drugging him so that I can have an easier life. Yeah.
Basically.
Did you ever consider?
I did not consider pharmaceuticals at all until he was 16 years old.
16. Okay.
Okay. And at that time, I want to put this out there real quick. When I did talk to the psychiatrist when he was 16 years old, and the psychiatrist asked, have you ever put him on a medication? And I said, absolutely not. The psychiatrist we were seeing said to me, I'm really glad you did not put him on medications because we really don't know what it's doing to their growth if you start them at a young age.
Oh.
He said, really, 16 is about the earliest. You can say it's probably not going to have that kind of an impact.
That kind, you mean like like their physical growth?
Yes, their physical growth, their hormonal processes.
Oh, right.
Everything.
We have no idea.
We have no idea what we're doing to all these kids.
Oh, gosh.
We're starting to find out now because, like I said, they've been doing it since the 1970s.
Yeah.
And I felt like, now I know there's parents who would disagree with me and say that, I'm fighting for my child too by giving them drugs to help them focus and they're going to have a better life because of it, blah, blah, blah. But I felt like I was fighting for my child's adulthood.
Okay.
Does that make sense? By not putting him on drugs.
So by trying to not create a drug habit from the beginning because you were looking forward to the future.
Right.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying he didn't go choose a drug habit for himself later. And I take responsibility for the fact that I never figured this out really well as a parent. I mean, at the time. Retrospect, you know, is always 20/20.
Yeah.
I really know now probably what would have worked for him. But when you're in it, you're so emotionally overwhelmed. And believe me, I know how hard parents are trying to figure out what is the best thing to help this child.
Yeah.
I know what a relief it would have been to have him on the drugs and just have him quietly sit in the corner and read a book.
Yeah.
And it was so tempting because I was tired of him sometimes.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. I was done on some days, and then I still had 3 more hours of him, you know.
And 2 other children.
And 2 other children and a husband and a household to run.
Yeah.
But you know what? I was there, too.
Right.
Because I was there full time. I was there for him.
And that was a choice that you and your husband probably made together.
We did.
To create finances and a lifestyle that would allow that.
So if he couldn't make it through a school year, let's just say, which happened frequently, I was there to take him back home. And I'm going to be really, really raw and really honest right now.
Okay.
And I didn't like it because he exhausted me. I didn't want him home all day, every day.
You mean to homeschool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he just overwhelmed me too.
Mm, yeah.
Now, as far as what drug might have worked for him, in retrospect, the one thing that I think now was like probably very relatively benign, it's been around for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years,
is
coffee.
Really?
Yes. Because they have found that people, these kids that are spun out, you give them a little coffee, it calms them down.
Oh, so caffeine.
Well, Ritalin's a stimulant. You give an overstimulated kid a stimulant, it calms them down.
Okay.
So I'm in retrospect going, I should have given that kid a cup of coffee right before bed every night. And he and I have talked about it. And the reason I realize this is because I said to him one day when he was like 19 or something, would you like a cup of coffee? And he said, oh, no, I can't drink that in the morning. It puts me to sleep. And I went, darn it. I wish I had, you know, really not been so resistant
to coffee.
Because that, really, they're finding isn't really impacting growth and all that as much as everybody wanted to believe it was in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
It's really not. As long as you get organic-based coffee and it hasn't gone through the process where they've put the chemicals in it, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. So now this boy is in his
20s, he's 26.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gone the hard route. I'm not going to play with that either. I mean, he's in prison right now, getting ready to come out because he's, he couldn't maintain always that control of his brain.
Right. But in the trials that he's gone through, including prison, he's learned how to work with his brain.
He has.
What it needs, what it doesn't need. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, because the number one overarching thing that he did was he released himself to Christ. He came to believe that Jesus really could help him with this.
Good.
As an adult. Now, when he was 16 and we were looking at the drug issue, whether we should have a drug or not.
Yeah.
We got the other diagnosis du jour.
Which is?
Bipolar.
Oh, right.
Everybody who's a little emotional and outside of the band of what's comfortable for someone else is now considered bipolar. If they're emotionally high, then emotionally low, and da-da-da.
Can I just say that that, to me, also describes children?
Yes.
I look at my young kids, and, you know, they'll be playing great, and then all of a sudden one thing happens, and the world falls apart, and they are crashed.
And then there's a day they're so hyper happy, you're like, what the heck? I have to peel them off the ceiling.
This is the best day ever.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the worst day ever.
Yeah.
And to me, I just wonder if some of these adults that are diagnosed as bipolar, if really emotionally they're still a child and not quite sure, you know,
how to control their responses. Yeah.
Yes.
Or how to even talk in a mature way about the fact they're having those emotions.
Right.
So
I guess
nobody wants to hear them.
Yeah.
So we're back to environment because when I get a family in here, Catherine, who says, we have this kid who's out of control.
Yeah.
I have one couple that jokes about this, that she called me and said, we have a kid who's out of control. She was referred to me because a lot of people know I had a kid who was out of control.
Yeah.
So as I've learned and grown as a counselor after he became really an adult, but I'm also a mom who knows what it's like. But my response to her, she'll frame it this way, that my response was, that's nice, bring me your marriage.
Yeah.
Okay. So I do this assessment at the beginning of the marriage counseling, the Taylor Johnson temperament assessment, right?
Okay.
When somebody is telling me that they have a kid who's out of control, I can almost guarantee, almost, I'm not going to say 100%, but almost guarantee, one of those parents is going to score out as high dominance, high angry, and high expectations of other people.
Oh.
And that was me.
That was you?
I admit it. I had high anger. I had dominance. I had rejection pain. I had all those things going on.
And high expectations.
And I wanted, yes, but then I would just crash and be whatever. Nobody's going to do anything anyway, so nothing gets done. So I had some impulsiveness, too.
Yeah.
I had some of that.
Bipolar-ish.
Yeah, I suppose, if you want to say that. If you hear Sharon laughing in the background, it's because she works with me every day. So she's the one who sees that. So it was like I didn't have those tools that I learned about how to focus to care and all of that. But I see Steven now. I visit him in prison and stuff, and he and I talk about all of this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things when you mentioned, he was releasing himself to God, what I started to say was when we saw that psychiatrist when he was 16,
yeah,
and the psychiatrist said, oh, I would really rather give him this XYZ drug, right?
Okay.
Well, Steven has now told me he never actually took it. He took it to school and sold it.
Okay. So when he was 16, you did get a prescription for something for him.
Right.
And you thought he took it and it didn't make a difference.
Right. And I'm like, nothing's changing. And it's because he was taking it and then pocketing it and then selling it at school.
Oh, my.
Then he started to tell me, I mean, these kids are brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, if you try to say, well, they can't learn, they're brilliant. If you just teach them to read, once they figure this all out, they can learn anything.
Yeah.
You can go talk to Steven now, and he's brilliant. And he learns anything, and he is educated.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And some of it, he's educated himself because he fought structured education.
Yeah.
But now he's educating himself, and it's amazing.
Cool.
And he's focusing on it.
So now he can focus.
But anyway, the point is he started to tell me that he was crashing in the afternoon, and could he please have one to take in the afternoon, too?
Wait, I didn't follow that.
Of the drugs that he was selling. So he started to convince me that he needed to have one to take to school with him to take in the afternoon. So he's pocketing the morning dose And he's taking an afternoon dose with him, and he's selling them.
Okay. And not taking anything.
And not taking anything.
Oy.
So finally, I put them in a safe.
A safe.
So he couldn't, like, just go get them, because I noticed some were missing as well on top of it, you know, because this is now career choice. I don't know, you know. he's got a new career selling these drugs.
Yes.
So I put them in a safe, and I was doling him out and watching him. Now, you know, I didn't know. I did not make him lift his tongue. I've got a former, you know, nurse here who had to pass out meds and all the tricks. So, no, I didn't do all that. So I don't know how many times he was tonguing it, cheeking it, and then selling it.
Ew. Oh, that is a whole nother level of ew.
So,
here,
I don't know.
You want to buy this drug I just spit out?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So essentially,
oh, no.
But our conversations became this, based on what I was just telling you about, it's not as much genetics as it is environment and things like that.
Yes.
I did not always get it right with this kid at all. Okay, but there's things that he will tell you that we did get very right.
Yeah.
The one thing he has walked away with more than anything else is we never gave up on him.
Yeah.
We were always there for him. We were always fighting for him.
Yeah.
Even when he thought we weren't. Okay, he sees now that we always fought for him, that we didn't want him drugged out.
Yeah.
That I was willing to put up with all of it because it was better for him. Physically and long term,
yeah.
Not be on years and years and years and years of these drugs. Yes, he chose illegal drug use later, but he's not on them now.
Right.
And the amazing thing is I just think in some ways my prayers as a mom protected him through that even because he was on meth, Catherine, and his teeth are gorgeous still.
Really?
I know. Everybody's shocked. I spent $5,000 straightening those teeth, and when we found out he was on meth, we were livid.
Oh, yeah.
There's another $5,000 down the drain with a kid like this. But his teeth are gorgeous. Everybody's like, how could you have been on meth? Look at those teeth. Thanks. And he, so I see, and he'll even say, man, the Lord has really protected me even in the physical through my own stupidity.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah. So
that's
there was
good.
That piece. But I started having conversations with him about how we all have challenges.
Yeah.
You know, when we sit before the Lord and we say, take away my cancer or help me with my heart disease or whatever. We all may have challenges. Is there a gene for breast cancer? Probably, but my environment impacts that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So my challenge would be I have the gene for breast cancer. My challenge is I have to be exceptionally careful about my diet, my exercise, my environment, what I expose my breasts to, basically, even radiation from mammography.
Right, right.
So I have to be more vigilant than somebody else in that area.
Yes.
So I started to talk to him about the fact that, okay, even just for argument's sake, if you have bipolar, yippee, kayo, kaye, that's your challenge.
Right.
That is not your diagnosis. That's your challenge.
If, in fact, it is there.
A real thing.
Yeah.
If, in fact, all that's a real thing, it's your challenge. You have a responsibility and an obligation before the Lord to figure out what he wants you to do with it.
Yeah. How do you want me to take care of myself today, Lord?
Right.
To best manage what is going on inside of my body. Whether it's, like you said, the cancer gene, or whether it's an emotional brain hormone
thing.
Deficiency issue, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. We have since learned with Stephen, and a lot of people will say, I went the diet route, I did the allergy thing. Yeah, I did all of those. Honestly, I'll be really honest with you, I probably didn't like outlast him on these things.
What do you mean?
Like watching it carefully enough, long enough to see the end result.
Like, for example, if you were to try like a, I don't know, gluten-free, you mean you didn't try it long enough?
Probably. Yeah, he would outlast, I would outlast myself. Okay, if I was going to be parenting that child today, that would never happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I've learned, I've grown.
Yeah.
I've learned how to be more consistent over longer periods of time.
Right,
okay?
Right.
And I was not always consistent over long periods of time. So that would also then impact a child with this ADHD that, you know, he does really well with routine and structure. And he just got a mom who's not wasn't real good at routine and structure. Now, you guys work with me at the center, and you can see that God has really helped me in that because I do have a lot of routine and structure here.
Sure.
But there's moments I just can't face it, you know, and I have to take time off from the routine and the structure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's me, and I accept that, and we all work with our routines. And that's what I wanted him to understand. It's okay to be how God made you, but God wants to change us for his purposes. We're not stuck with it. It's just a challenge.
Yeah.
So following routine and structure on a regular daily basis is a challenge for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm meeting the challenge on a 90% of the time basis, probably, where before I might have met it at, you know, 30. And my poor kids had to live through that.
Well,
yeah.
So those parents out there that are dealing with a child that they suspect or may have even had diagnosed as ADHD, do you have suggestions for them?
First of all, they don't need to be labeled. And second of all, drugs is not the answer necessarily. I had a friend who had his kid in public school, and he went to the meetings about what they were going to do to help him. He said he had to tell them 4 or 5 times, drugs are not an option.
Right.
What's the next option?
Yes.
And this was at the meeting with the school.
Okay.
Because you have to remember something about psychotropic drugs, mm-hmm. any drugs for these things. The drugs do not cure, fix, or help anything for the child or the person taking them. It just makes life easier for everybody around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
You know, I tell some people who are prone towards bipolar, really, a bipolar person in a totally different culture, like, say, a tribal culture, they would be the witch doctor that everybody revered. Okay? They would go off on these crazy walkabouts.
Right.
And they would come back with all the visions and all the dreams they had and all the wisdom they gained. And everybody would just sit around waiting to hear it. And then when that person flipped out on them again, they would just go, oh, the witch doctor's being touched by, you know, the gods and going to go back and bring back some amazing things, right?
Yeah.
They never saw them as sick or a problem. Now, I'm not wanting anybody to have a witch doctor for a kid, but we can.
Oh, good.
Okay, yay. But we can go to the Lord, and we can say, God, this is a challenge. I am supposed to teach my child. You know, Catherine, we were talking about Ephesians 6:4.
Yes.
And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord.
Yeah.
That is part of that environmental peace.
Yes, yes. My translation says exasperate.
Oh, that's a good translation.
So we as parents exasperate them, don't we? Don't cause that frustration. Don't provoke them. Yeah.
Don't provoke them. And, you know, yes, we have to discipline them. And sometimes they don't like discipline and it makes them angry. But if we're doing it in the instruction and discipline
training.
Of the Lord.
Yes.
Which is what I finally was trying to do with Stephen. It's about the Lord. He made you this way for a purpose and a reason. You need to submit it to him.
Yeah.
And when it's submitted to him, oh my gosh, I can't wait for you guys to talk with him because he's going to be coming back pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are going to be amazed at what he's doing with how God made him, and it's submitted
That's
to the
so
Lord.
So cool. So if we're walking in a dunamis life, if we're walking through the power of the Spirit on this
right.
issue, we can just totally lean into his strength and power to get through maybe daily those challenges, you know, with difficult
right.
children.
And maybe other people in our culture don't get us, but
yeah.
God gets us, and
yeah.
God is using us within that structure. And Stephen and me, too, we're seeing the beauty of the outcome of submitting those
Praise
things to
Lord.
God. So I'm Dr. Pauline Dillard.
And I'm Catherine Pearson.
And thank you for listening today.